Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today Kristen Knapp from Five Friends Travel is joining me. How are you today?
I am excellent. It's always so great to be on the show with you.
And we haven't chatted for a while, so there's kind of a treat at the end. We always record the sound check, and we went on for a very long time. I was like, oh, this could be a whole show by itself, but it's just us catching up. So there's some good stuff over there. The core part of the show is not as long as you'll see it'll probably say like an hour and a half long for this episode. The core part is going to be shorter. And today we have a question from a Buy Me a Coffee supporter, Dell. Actually, a couple questions and not really questions. It's just points, like some ideas that he wanted to go over. And that is people over-saving as a risk to maybe their FI journey. And then the second area is having something to retire to. And the fun part about this is Kristen and I think we disagree about almost everything.
No, stop.
We have diverse opinions and we'll be picking different areas. And I think it's a great discussion because there's a lot of like kind of advanced topic areas where like people have dug in a little bit deeper. And just curious, Kristen, had you thought about some of these ideas over the last few years as you moved to part-time and that sort of thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was scared a little bit to move to part-time because I was afraid I was going to struggle with all the extra free time. So that's why I feel so strongly that it's important to have something to retire to. And I think over-saving personally isn't great because, I mean, I have my own biases. Like, I don't have heirs. I don't have kids, right? So I think, well, somebody's going to spend that money. You know, why not me spend it now to also, you know, enjoy my life, but give it now to the causes that I love and support. So I have some strong thoughts, but you know, everybody's situation is different. We recognize that.
Yes. And Dell is a Buy Me a Coffee supporter. So if you want to learn how you could support the show, if you enjoy it, if you like not having ads, I'll put a link and you could check it out. But Dell had a few ideas and I was like, these are pretty good. He actually sent a voicemail, which we'll play in a little while. And one other thing as a preface, I've been realizing this, listening to a couple other podcasts where I've kind of disagreed with some of the points. Some of them were a little bit more like debatey, but it's apparent, obviously, and Kristen, you said it, like everyone's different and they have their own background and goals. And I'm not trying to like direct anyone to do anything. These are our own opinions. And I think it's important to realize like no one's prescribing like, hey, this is the only way to do things. If they are, I'm not sure why they're trying to direct everyone to do things a certain way because there's a huge spectrum and some people want to keep working, even if they can stop. And I'm not trying to convince them that they need to retire. If they want to work, that's cool. Whatever you want to do is great. And if it works for you and your goals and your family and how you want to spend your time, that's great. I'm not trying to push anyone in some direction. Although for our discussion, I mean, to have an interesting discussion, usually you have to have like some opinion. So we'll say it that way. Do you have any other caveats you want to throw in? Like,
oh, I'm real opinionated. I'm excited. Let's talk about Dell for a second, though. He says he's a FI aficionado. He started around 2009, so pretty early. So he even says himself, before we listen to this voicemail, that maybe he's a bit in the weeds. He says now he considers his time, he's a FI sociologist as a hobby. So he's got some deep thoughts he's sharing with us.
Hey, it's Dell here, and I have an opinion that goes a little against the zeitgeist of this post-pandemic FI. I think this alleged oversaving to a point really isn't as much of an issue. So here's some reasons. So first, spending some time working, whatever that means for you, well, really, really not having to, can give a different perspective in a way that I think is good for getting a psychological and philosophical angle worked out. I think there's something around the almost FI to just post FI point that allows for that in a new way. also gratefulness and overabundance can really come on even more overwhelmingly with like a large buffer in two ways. Let's say oversave for like 2 years or something. So first, knowing large, early, unforeseen personal shocks aren't as much of an issue. I think that's a great thing. Also, allowing your spending to pick up in a way that trails portfolio growth can feel way more like play than trusting the numbers when you're trying to up your spending. And to me, that's a really big difference. So of course, just like with any abusive relationship, if work is abusive, GTFO. But you know, that aside, maybe some perspective can ease one into early retirement in a psychologically better way.
All right. Thanks, Del, for sending that in. And I'll quickly summarize to make sure we hit the main points. He's saying working when it's actually optional can be beneficial. And I've actually heard a few people saying once they knew they could quit and they continued to work, work wasn't so bad, which is kind of surprising, but it must have not been that bad. Like Del said, if you're in a really bad situation, maybe they're making you work too much and you don't get to see your family, then maybe it's a decent time to get out of there. Number two, having more money can help you be grateful and generous and resilient when unexpected expenses come up, which, well, they're unexpected, so you can't really plan for it, but you know they might come up. And three, spending a little bit more slowly can make it easier if you're not used to it. And this is where some of our like frugal habits can be very strong habits. And even if you have the budget and you've planned on, say, spending a little bit more traveling or for trips or something like that, but you're hesitant to do it because you're like, well, maybe it's a little bit slower growth in the market that you plan for because it's a down year, but just having like a little bit more money available makes it a little bit easier to spend. So those are kind of the main areas. Kristen,
can I just say,
yeah,
Del, you have an amazing podcast voice.
Just started a podcast, Del. Very good. Any initial thoughts?
I'm kind of working when it's optional at this point. And, you know, we talk a lot in this community about FU money and stuff like that. And a couple things for me personally, I like the structure of having 2 days a week. Like, I feel like it still gives me enough free time to do all the things that I want. And I'm feeling productive at the same time. But also, now that I'm in this place in my life where I don't have to work anymore, I am able to set some boundaries that maybe I wasn't comfortable setting before, right? So if they ask me to work on a day that I'm not available, I feel it's a lot easier for me to say no. Right. I'm not worried about losing my job anymore, right? And that makes such a big difference. But also, for me personally, I need to feel like I'm being productive. I have a really hard time just sitting around all day. I don't know. That's a me thing. Mm-hmm.
And then, it's interesting too, just thinking of the productivity, it's like usually we have this idea of productivity around work, but it could be like productivity related to health, mm-hmm. which we talk about health a lot in the sound check at the end. But basically, like, you can spend almost all your time working on like health and fitness related things. Eventually you would get tired, but like you literally could spend a huge amount of your time, probably like 6 hours a day, like doing something active where you're thinking or just walking around, like you know, me being productive in a traditional sense would be like sitting at the fucking computer, which is probably like the worst thing that you could do.
Yeah.
Just sitting like looking at a screen or whatever. So, okay. Very good. Let's get into, we'll break it down in really like pros and cons of these different points. And this was just the first one, so we'll kind of knock it through. Kristen, do you want to kind of walk through some of the points here?
Sure. So pros, the sleep well at night factor. So there's this psychological floor, right? Oversaving acts as an insurance policy against sequence of returns risk, which we hear so much about. So if the market dips, like right after you stop working, that big extra cash cushion prevents you from having to sell at a loss. But what I would say to that is, I mean, if you've got your portfolio structured properly and you've got a few years in cash equivalents, which you probably should, then you don't have to sell at a loss, right? So then what's the concern?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm asking you, what's the concern?
No, I mean, I think you're right. Like you plan for it ahead of time. Like, okay, yeah. If there's a down years, or you probably have some flexibility in your expenses. So again, going back to trips, which often can be optional, maybe you take a different trip that is not as expensive as the one that you were planning on. Usually you have a little leeway. So yeah, like, I mean, still it helps you sleep better at night to have the extra money.
Worry about people continuing to work extra time because that's something that they're afraid of and that can be planned for. I mean, if you want to work because you want to work, that's one thing, but don't do it because you have this fear, because if you have your portfolio set up properly, then you should be able to weather that storm, right?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it is like the one more year syndrome. I mean, I'm pretty sure like Elizabeth worked longer than she needed to. Of course, we didn't know the returns were going to be favorable, but we did have it. I mean, basically like we did this, we saved a little more than we needed to just to make sure the sequence of returns like wasn't going to be an issue. And we had everything set up properly. I do have an issue with like being overly conservative for every assumption. And then you have this compounding effect of like a ton of conservative assumptions where you're like, oh, we've actually oversaved by a fairly considerable amount, not us specifically, but one could do that. And then you could keep working and we're like, well, if $3 million is good, 3.5 is a little better and 4 is better than that. So at some point you're just like, ah, okay. Like there's no end to moving the goal line. Yes. So that could be a dangerous thing.
You know, another pro is the working on my terms pivot. And I kind of hit on this a little bit. Once you don't need the money, a lot of times your performance improves because you're no longer scared of getting fired. You can speak your mind, take risks, set boundaries that you were too scared to do before. For me, I don't know necessarily that my performance improved, but I'm definitely in a better mind space at work. I'm less stressed out about work. I'm happier at work because I feel like I can set these boundaries and I can say no. And if at some point I'm taking off too much for my travels, which is probably going to happen, and they say, you know, you're taking off too much, this doesn't work for us anymore, I can say, okay, well, thank you. And here's my notice, right? So that definitely has given me, gosh, the peace that I feel that I'm at that place in my life. But it's taken me a long time to get here. This year, I'm actually celebrating 30 years in the TV news business.
Wow.
I know. It's crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah, that makes total sense. It's like, it gives you the confidence to exercise the FU money, where even before, if you had the FU money, you weren't thinking, I'm going to set these boundaries up and say no to things you don't want to do. So it's cool that you could do it. And I kind of similar when I got laid off, I guess I had like an FU money mentality. I don't know. I was earning money on the side, so I felt confident. But basically, we slow traveled. I was traveling, working remotely. And basically, I just moved and then called my boss and was like, I moved. If you want to transfer me, like we could do this. And then it worked out for like a couple of weeks. They were like, we think so. And then they were like, no, just lay this guy off. So they laid me off. Mm. So I found the edge of what was acceptable. It sounds like you'll be exploring that.
The edge. I would have never explored the edge before. I definitely am doing that because at this point in my life, while I do still enjoy my work 2 days a week, much more than 2 days a week now, but 2 days a week is good. But I'm really enjoying spending more time doing FI community things and traveling with the FI community. I run, you know, this local Choose FI St. Louis group. So these are the things that really bring me so much joy that I want to spend my time doing. So it's funny because I randomly ran into my boss at a bar last week and was able to have a conversation with him. And I think over a few beers, he probably spoke a little bit more freely than he would have in the office. But he wants me to do more. And I'm like, no, he's like, but you could do a podcast over the air about money stuff. And I'm like, that sounds awesome, but it's just more work. Like if I was doing it with my, with the FI community, it's one thing to do it here, right? Because I've got my Choose FI St. Louis group. That's my community. And I'm having that conversation with them, my people. It's another thing to just sit in a studio and speak into the void and who knows who's listening. I mean, I get that I'm putting quality content out there, but I'm also, I'm at work. I don't know. In my brain, it's just different. I'm like, no, yeah. Less hours, not more hours.
It does sound suspiciously like work. Yeah.
So another one of the pros here is the power of yes, right? You can say more yeses if you want to. You can also say no's, right? But extra capital allows you to say yes to spontaneous things. Generosity, picking up the tab for a friend, donating to a cause without worrying about the budget, helping out a family member if there's some sort of crisis, last minute travel, right? Mm. And this shifts that mindset from scarcity to abundance.
Yep. And I was going to say, like, been trying to do a little bit more of that, especially like with the family travel. I can't remember if we talked about this before we started recording, but like I have taken some trips and like we have one coming up where like I'll probably pick up the hotel bill for the crew just to be nice. And you taught me about these points. Credit card points. Yeah. So I have a few points built up and then there'll just be a little bit more on top of that. But yeah, and I've seen like Carl and Mindy, like Carl picks up tabs, like at places like Economy and stuff where he would throw like a big party or his pizza party, which unfortunately Carl and Mindy aren't coming to Economy this year, but
ooh.
Yeah, we'll miss them. And the pizza party was great. I wonder if someone will step up and do that, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
It's always crazy in there. There's like 100 people getting pizza. Like it just it spreads, the rumors spread.
I am really excited about Economy though. That is right around the corner. I love it because I have 5 friends all over the country now from different camps and things. So a lot of people all go to this. It's one big thing annually. So I think Diana Merriam, who founded Economy, even jokes that Economy is like a reunion of all the Camp Fi people. It's more than that, but it's some of that too. I'm sorry, I pivoted. I got excited about Economy.
It's so fun. Yeah. I brought it up. Yeah. Okay. And last one here is around legacy and impact. And yeah, how does that like play into your ideas around this?
So it moves the conversation from how do I survive to what do I want to leave behind? So we're talking philanthropy or something for your heirs. I think I mentioned this earlier, like I don't have children. My ideas here will probably pivot, right? I mean, our ideas change as we get older. Right now, I'm very much of the kind of die with zero. I want to spend it. And selfishly, right now, I want to spend it on living this extraordinary life. And a little bit of a backstory, if you haven't heard mine, is I come from very, very little. Like I struggled. I grew up in poverty. So I feel like this stage of my life, I'm making up for the first 30 years, right? So yes, I suppose it's selfish. I want to go and live this great big life. But I do want to do some meaningful things too. I need to figure out what that's going to look like for me.
Pretty much the same for me, although didn't have as much adversity growing up. But yeah, no kids. And I'm like, I could probably figure out how to spend a lot of this. And I'm excited to try.
So, do you think about legacy, what that could look like for you? Like, how are people going to remember Doug?
Yeah, you know what? I do. Well, it'll take... not a dark turn, but it may be slightly abrasive to people. So just brace yourself, everyone. I think I'm more of a nihilist. And I don't really care that much. I think I try to do as much.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Nice stuff as I can and be supportive and I want to have a good set of friends and
At the end of the day, you're dead. You don't know the difference, right?
Yeah. And I think if people do want to have a legacy, again, respect whatever floats your boat out there. Like that's cool. But it's in my, like, it's pretty ego focused where it's just like, I want people to remember me as this fucking awesome, whatever. I don't know. That's like stroking your own ego a little bit, but if you want to do it, that's totally cool. You could like spread like really great things while you're doing that. But for me, I don't really give a shit too much.
bringing me a lot of joy at this phase in my life is just creating community and having people that go on my trips that never knew each other before, who meet each other across the, you know, pond in Morocco, and then they become really good friends. And, you know, seeing these
perfect
relationships develop because of things that I've created, the trips, or whether it's my local community or things like that, that's something I feel really strongly about. And I hope someday when I'm gone that somebody will pick up the torch, continue doing those things.
That's great. Yeah, you're a hub. You're bringing people together, creating even more community. Yeah, that's great. And maybe like indirectly, like doing the podcast and like going to events, like I'm doing that in an indirect way. Because I do know like some listeners have met up and like they've become better friends and stuff like that. But yeah, not the sole goal. So, and actually to bring it all together, kind of like, I do the show selfishly because it's fun and I get to talk to friends. Basically, that's it. Like it's pretty cool.
He's not getting rich off this, folks. Trust me.
Yeah. But thank you for all the new supporters out there. Like we're paying for software and like the microphone.
Yeah, we don't want the show to go away and we don't want him to have to pay out of pocket to do the show. So somebody buy him a coffee.
Yeah. Okay. So now moving on to the cons, and essentially these all come down to like opportunity cost in some way or another. And first one we kind of mentioned before, the one more year syndrome issue, where it's like, if a little bit more is good, then a little bit more from that will also be good. And it could be pretty tough, even if you have like a finish line in mind with a specific number, you can trick yourself if work's not too bad, for example, and you're like, I could do just a little bit more. Again, one more year syndrome, and it could be, you know, if you work at a fancy tech company, you might have some bonuses that come quarterly, and then they make that a little smaller. It's like whatever, 3 more month syndrome, and they like keep you sticking on, and it's not quite bad enough for you to quit yet. So yeah, it could be dangerous, and it's good to have like a plan ahead of time and like to stick to it versus like get sucked into just a little bit more because it's not bad enough.
You know, you can always make more money, but you can never buy back that year you spent in a cubicle when you were younger and healthier, right? I think I'm running into a little bit of this with my husband because he's like, gosh, you know, I make this really good money and I feel like I hardly work at all. And I, you know, and honestly, if he really loves it, okay, that's fine. But at the end of the day, like I really want to travel more with him and he can't take off that much time. You know, I'm like, I want to be able to go to Spain for a month. And we can't do that right now as long as you're working. And then another thing that's happening is he keeps having back stuff. He had a herniated disc a few years ago and had to have surgery. Well, he's got 2 new herniations. And this is 100% because of his job. And I'm just like, oh, how much longer are we going to do this? Like, isn't that enough to make you want to think about pivoting? I think he's not into the FI stuff like me. He doesn't come to the events. But I think he's having a really, I can't get his brain to adjust to this idea. I'm working on him. Right now, the biggest hang up is just he's got a son in college and he just kind of wants to see him launched before he pulls the plug. But in all fairness, I mean, if he retired and started pulling the money now, he'd have the money to fund this. So I don't know. It's a brain set for him.
Yeah. And he's a firefighter, right?
Yeah.
Pretty good pension, or is it a little bit different?
I think I might say this wrong. I think it's like a 401A. It looks very much like my 401K, in the sense that once he feels like he has enough money in there, he can leave. So it's not like you have to work so many years before you get it. The difference is the city puts in 11%, which is incredible. And then there's a 4.7% that he puts in, and that's been going on every year from the beginning. So 18% a year going into this thing from the very beginning, and they call it their pension, but it's not really a traditional pension. And this is kind of in lieu of them getting Social Security.
Yep. Okay. Got it. But he would get Social Security in the future though, right?
No. They're not paying into it. Mm-mm. So that's why the city put so much in, kind of because they're not paying for the security. But he also has a deferred comp. So we've been putting a lot in there because that could be our bridge. So he can start pulling from that as soon as he separates from service. But he's going to separate from service. So I keep saying 2028. He's like, at the earliest. And I'm like, at the latest. So we'll see. We'll see where we land.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, and I was going to say my dad was a firefighter and I didn't even realize it until later and pulled everything together, but he retired like 49. Yeah. But he got his 30 years in. Wow. And this was, you know, we started in the early 70s when they had sick pensions and like worked out great. I was going to say, and he hasn't, I mean, he stopped working like 20 plus, like about 20 years ago. He's had a blast. And I think maybe that's maybe exactly why I'm pretty comfortable with like the unstructured time. Like he didn't retire to something, like he started traveling and doing other stuff. And like, there's always like home projects or whatever. So like, I think me seeing that in a firefighter, often it depends on where, but like my dad would work 24 hours and 48 off. And like, it depends on where. It could be like a couple, few days off and then a few days working, but there's a lot of free time, like
it's a lot of free time.
Schedule.
He says he feels like he's already retired because he goes to work for 48 hours and then he comes home for 4 days. And he already has tons of free time, kind of like me now, having 5 days off Monday through Friday, right? I've got tons of free time. So I'm not in a huge rush. But at the same time, I have these big dreams wanting to be able to travel more. And I'm like, we can't do that as long as we're still working.
Yeah. And I was going to say, in a lot of firefighters, they start businesses after they retire. So I know my dad would, he never worked at these places, but like, I think some of his old friends, they, whatever, they would have like a painting business or some construction or whatever, like usually some sort of trade, cause they were handy and like solve problems and they wanted to do stuff. And they, a lot of them were kind of young when they retired, depending on when they started. So anyway, y'all will figure it out.
Yeah. Okay. So another one, another con with the opportunity cost is health and vitality, right? So we hear about the go-go years, the slow-go, the no-go. I think the go-go, aren't those usually like 60s, right? Slow-go is usually like 70s. Is that right?
Sounds right. Sure.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
And then the no-go phase of retirement. So if you work extra years and over-save, often you're going to be trading some of your higher energy years for a bigger bank account. But if you can't really enjoy it, what's the point? This is one of those things I'm trying to impress upon my husband.
Yeah. You don't want to be with back problems on a plane for 8 hours or whatever. It's like you do the harder trips. Like I think once we start traveling a little more, we'll hit some of those national parks in Alaska and just like some of the longer, more difficult places to get to. So yeah, totally makes sense. Next is
talk about these golden handcuffs, because I'm curious your thoughts on that one.
Yeah, I think, gosh, I feel bad for folks. And I'll make a hypothetical. I know people in roughly the similar situation. Essentially, they're earning so much money right now, like right before they can retire. And let's say the person has way more than they expected or whatever they planned for. And they've done awesome, but they're getting paid so much now, the height of their whole career and everything, all their sunk cost in the past built up for them to earn and have this position. And they don't want to let it go. And I feel like a lot of it is like the sunk cost of building your network, all the experience, sticking at a company for long enough to, you know, move up. And it's like, they don't want to say goodbye to that huge fucking salary. And it must be really hard. I was never in that position and I'm not sure like what I would do if I'm like, it's not that bad. They are paying me like three times as much as I started like my career with, or whatever, 10 times or whatever it is, whatever crazy amount of money it is. And it could be really difficult to walk away. You're like, I could just work for one more year. And it's the equivalent of like 10 more years from earlier in your career. So it must be really tough. And I don't know how people like disconnect, unless, like I said, it's kind of a blessing to have a horrible job in some cases, because then you can see that it's negatively impacting you. But
if you really love it though, and it brings you joy, and you would do it for free, then by all means stay. But I really think you need to think about, you know, I always say, like, what's the point of being the richest man in the graveyard, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. We got to really think about when enough is enough.
So I ran my own business and I made pretty good money. I made a lot more than when I worked for a company. And around the time that I started earning a lot more, I was kind of hearing some of the five voices. So I was listening to two kinds of podcasts. One was entrepreneurs that were like, I want to grow this thing as big as possible. And then the other podcast, which I gravitated towards more over time, it was people that realized when they had enough, people in the FI community. So they're like, oh, I reached my goal. And then I stopped working because I had what I was aiming for. So that was really important. And when I reached some level, I was like, I don't think I'm going to grow anymore. I'm just going to go steady, which in a lot of ways, if you're running a business, if you're like, I don't want to grow, I'm going to be steady, it's a good way to like decline slowly over time, which is exactly what happened for me. But it coincided perfectly for when I wanted to do less work. So I didn't have like golden handcuffs from a company, but I was like, I'm working for myself. And I'm like, this is good enough. I don't have huge ambition. And then I just turned it off when I was ready, instead of like continuing to push. Like, I'm not sure like why some folks like have that drive. Like, they're proving something to themselves or their family or something, but I don't have that issue.
Yeah.
I didn't have that drive, and it was easy for me to just stop. So
another thing to think about is, you know, there is a point of diminishing returns, right? The difference between making $50,000 a year and $100,000 a year, I mean, the happiness jump there, I think, is pretty good for me, like, just, you know, financial peace and being able to sleep better at night and not having to worry about your bills. That definitely improved my life a lot. But the jump from, say, 5 million to 5.5 million, I mean, in terms of daily joy, what kind of a difference is that going to make? It's probably almost statistically invisible, right?
Yeah. And you wouldn't make any different decisions. And I mean, yeah, even like from 4 million to 5.5, like, is that really going to change like your day-to-day or what you're doing? So I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. As far as your net worth goes, from 5 million to 5.5 million, I mean, I feel like we spend intentionally, and our spending probably isn't going to change whether we have 5 or 5.5. I don't think mine would. Would yours? I don't know. Maybe we would force ourselves, I suppose, if we want to live our rich life and be like, okay, we have this much extra per year and we're going to make ourselves spend it. But I don't know. I feel like my spending is probably going to stay pretty similar to what it always has, because I don't value, I mean, to each their own. This is just me. Like, I don't value luxury cars now. I don't spend money on that. Once I start pulling down and I have a bunch of extra money to spend every year, I still don't see myself going out and buying a luxury car, because it just doesn't bring me value.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree with you. I could imagine a forced spend exercise where it's like a fun bucket situation, almost exactly how Mark at Mark's Money Mine and Kevin Sebesta, former guest of the show, when they described it as like the cream off the top. And it's like, okay, there's an extra 500K and you could do something specific with that, depending on, I mean, you can get a timeshare, for example. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, not Lord. A timeshare, but you could get something, or you're like, I'm going to spend this specifically. So only if you treated it as like an exercise in spending that extra money. But otherwise, yeah, like probably day to day, even your trips. I mean, it's only 10% difference. Obviously 10% is a decent amount, but if you're already at 5 million, anyway, it's weird problem. Who thought you and I like think like 30 years ago, if you'd be having a conversation on the difference between 5 million versus 5.5 million.
Yeah. I mean, I don't ever intend to have that much. Like, I don't need that much. I'm going to stop before it's ever that much. But then again, the market could do its thing and maybe someday, but I'm not intending on letting it get that high. Yeah. Okay. Important question now. Let's talk about this whole whether or not you need something to retire to, because I feel very strongly that you do, but that's also a very personal opinion. You say not really. Like, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I say not really. This is in our notes. Not really, probably not. It depends. So I think for certain people like you, it's probably beneficial to have some structure and to have like a plan around it. For other people, I think it may be very similar to someone like you, telling them that they need to have something to retire to accidentally forces them into, not forces, that's the wrong word, but it accidentally directs them to creating a job for themselves because they're very driven and they want to be productive and they like to make a list and they like to execute the list and they're like, I'm going to do these things.
You were describing my personality to a T.
And you're very good at that.
Can anybody see this? This is my little post-it note. Every day I write down, like, I have my list and crossing things off brings me such joy. See, record podcasts with Doug. Yeah. It's totally who I am.
And it serves you so well in so many ways, but sometimes it can be too much for some people. Like you can tell what's too much and you can move some of the tasks and the productivity away if it's overtaking or if it's stressing you out. But I have essentially just like seen people where they literally created a job and it could be like a nonprofit. And then they treated it like their job and they were really driven. And it's like, oh shit, like this is really hard. It's not fun. And it's like, just you created your own job.
You can say that about me. I mean, I created My Friends Travel. So let me jump into that for just a minute. My whole thing was when I moved to part-time work, I moved from full-time to 2 days a week. I was getting rid of the part of my job that I didn't like. There was some reporting stuff during the week that I didn't enjoy, but also I wanted more time to do the things that I love, the community building, the FI stuff, the travel. But I was nervous that I was going to have too much free time and I need to feel productive. So I created all these little things that I was going to try out, like experimentation in the beginning. So I took like a pottery class, I took cooking classes, and I was volunteering at the Humane Society. I was doing all these things. And then very quickly, I'm like, ooh, too much, like rein that in, dial that back, a lot of fitness, a lot of health stuff. And then over time, it kind of organically evolved into this Five Friends Travel thing. And I'm not even doing that other stuff anymore. But I don't look at it as a job. And let me tell you why. I was going to travel anyway. And I want to travel more than my husband wants to travel. So what does my husband tell me? He says, go with your friends. Who are my friends? It's the FI community. So I was already putting together little trips to go on with some of my FI friends. So I basically just made it a little bit more formal by making a website and, you know, inviting the greater community and doing more trips. Now, I'm doing 3 a year right now. And I love it. There is some stress that comes with it sometimes. I'm not going to lie. There is some stress. But I love it. So like, it doesn't matter. When I have stress at my other job, it makes me angry. Like when I have stress with the travel stuff, it doesn't make me angry. I'm just like, it's fine. It's part of it. Because in all honesty, I'm probably going to have the same stress if it's just me and my husband going on a trip or me and some friends going on the trip. It's probably going to be the same. So it's just part of it. But right now I'm doing 3 a year. I do feel like if maybe I went to 4 trips a year or 5 trips a year, then it's going to start feeling more like work. And there's some things that I'm not doing. For instance, I don't want to take your money. So I have like, for instance, when we went to Morocco in October, I did that trip through Intrepid. So I have Intrepid take your money because first of all, it feels icky to me. I don't want you to pay me. It just feels weird. But also, I don't want that headache, right? I don't want to do that part. I enjoy the planning of the trip and going on the trip. So at the end of the day, I'm planning epic trips. I want to go on and just inviting all of my friends. So it doesn't feel like a job. It's just something I love doing. It's just, I'm doing a little bit more of it now. Mm-hmm.
I like how you went part-time. You tried a bunch of stuff. Like the way you described it is how I would recommend people check it out with a similar personality type like yourself. A good personality type, by the way.
But like type A, like, you know, just super organized and, you know, productive and that type of person.
Yep. And I think you also, like, you're doing this stuff that you want to do, as you described, but I think you maybe, you asked me a little bit about some social media stuff in the past and like Instagram. And I think I probably told you, like, I think it's a fucking waste of time. If you want to do it, do it. But if you don't really care about it, it could be like a huge pain in the butt and you're going to be chasing your tail and it'll be way less like ROI than what other people that give a shit about social media would tell you. But like, probably not a good use of time overall. In, I mean, debatable, but if you don't enjoy it, then stay away from it. So, and you've done a good job like navigating that.
Yeah. I think the problem comes in where people just don't think about what's going to happen after FI, right? They just push, try to get to this number as quickly as possible. And then just think there's going to be rainbows and unicorns once they hit that number. And is it Carl that says money solves money problems? I don't know. But the point is, if you've got other issues in your life, like all of a sudden your life isn't going to be better the next day after you hit FI, right? So there's that to think about. And you just got to maybe experiment. Someone told me when I started thinking about my retirement date and when I would hit my FI number and all of that, they said, you might struggle with going from being this meteorologist for 30 years to just like not the next day. What about if you just kind of pivot down slowly and move to part-time? And it had never occurred to me in a million years. And had I not been in part of this community, it wouldn't have. It would have never happened. I wouldn't have had the confidence. But that has helped me a lot. And that's helped me sort of like have the extra free time while still working and start to build up the stuff I'm doing in my free time and figure out what I enjoy doing and that structure. And it's just made it a little bit simpler and not as an abrupt change overnight. But yeah, I think where people get in trouble is they just think they're going to hit this FI number and then everything's going to fall into place and life is going to be wonderful. And you just need to think about it. If you're thinking about it already, you're probably going to be fine. Just think about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think like people being tied to their identity. I mean, essentially that is kind of what I did even when I was doing consulting and I got laid off. I kind of slowly started doing online business and kind of slowly like walked away from that as well. So I'm also aware and I'm learning from other people that have had issues where they're like, I'm a meteorologist. And then all of a sudden, like, you're not. Well, you stepped into part time. So that made it a little bit easier. So you can like now build this new identity. But it's definitely an issue for folks that a lot of professionals, I always talk about like doctors and lawyers, they spend a lot of time learning their whole professional network. They're respected. If you're like, oh yeah, I'm a lawyer, people are like, oh yeah, like that, obviously you've spent a lot of time working on that. So it's tough when they move away from it. So I could appreciate the struggle that it can be if you're like, my identity is tied to my career. So I've tried to really separate that. And even more recently, I think Elizabeth mentioned like maybe me identifying as a podcaster and YouTuber a lot, maybe a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a great point. I need to move away from that. So just psychologically, mentally, I was just like, yeah, like that's fine. Yeah. If people ask me what I do, then I could mention it. But yeah, it's just I do other stuff.
Yeah. I guess not all of us are tied up our work with our identity, but I think for a lot of us, retiring to some sort of project prevents that identity crisis where you're like, who am I? Am I a nobody now? It's okay. I think it's okay to be a nobody, right? You know, no, I don't know. That's going to be different for different people.
So let's get in. We have pros and cons here. We'll hit what we can, of course, but like, I'm curious. So if someone, let's make up a hypothetical. So let's say someone was, we'll make up a career. We'll see if this works for you. So let's say they were in consulting. They worked in IT. So they were consulting in IT for like 20 years and they're going to stop working. So a lot of consultants are indeed type A. And they're list people and they're like, we have a project, we're going to finish it. We ship stuff, we finish our projects. That kind of personality, right? So let's say they're going to stop working. How would you tell them to navigate retiring to something or having structure. And I'll leave it kind of open. You could take a second to think if you want, but if we can put like steps on this, that would be interesting.
Well, I mean, I just kind of started Googling a little bit. I can only tell you what I did and that I don't have any other ideas other than what I did because I would have done them if I had any other ideas, right? So I went to the local community college just to see like what kind of classes were offered because they have adult education stuff, like fun stuff. There really was basket weaving. Like that was a class, right? Not that I wanted to do that. I'm not crafty. But that's where I saw things like pottery and language and pickleball. I did that one too. It didn't go well for me. I was never sporty. I thought maybe now that I'd had free time, maybe I would be sporty. No. I'm not. I failed miserably at that. I was like, I hate this. What am I doing? Yeah. So it was just a lot of experimentation. It was kind of looking around to see what was out there, what appealed to me, and then just trying it. And then as I saw that those things weren't really me, then just kind of putting them aside and kept trying stuff, right? And then this whole with doing this travel thing, I don't even know how that happened. It was very organic. It just, like I said, I was already doing little trips with five people. So I wanted to travel more. So it just was like, so more of that, right? What do you love? Do more of that.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I remember when we first met, probably you talked about travel. And I specifically remember you were like, I want to plan like trips and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I bet that could work out. And whatever, 2 years later, you were like leading bigger trips. I think you did a couple, like you said, just friends. And then you actually like launched something more organized.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was never like a big master plan though. It's not like I'm like, you know, before you met me, I mean, that's obviously when I had the idea, but in the beginning of this, it was never like, this is what I'm going to do. It's just what happened over time is that for better or for worse, a lot of my older established relationships have kind of fallen by the wayside. My five friends are my favorite friends. I do question if some of those relationships that I had in the past were more just out of convenience because those people were there, right? But once I found the Phi community and went to my first camp, it was the first time in my life where I'm like, oh my God, like I fit in. Like this is my tribe. These are my people. So then I started going to all these events. So now I have friends all over the country and like those are my people now. So if I want to travel and I don't really want to go by myself, I mean, I could, but like I don't want to. And my husband isn't available to go, you know, so it just was very organic how it all happened. I feel so lucky, like it just fell into place and I'm just sort of living this dream life now, like combining all of my favorite things, hanging out with five people and travel together. Are you kidding me? Two birds, one stone. But it wasn't like this grand master plan from the beginning. I just sort of fell into it.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. Yeah. And the trips are killer. So
one day you're going to come, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. For the people that don't know, we don't travel too much like big kind of international trips because we have Georgie who's sitting behind me. That's our dog. And we treat her like a little human child. So we do road trips. We actually travel quite a bit, but we do road trips. And you met her once, right? Like when we were through by the arch there. Okay. So good answer. A quick summary. So you explored a bunch of different ideas. You tried a bunch of things. You signed up for things that were way outside your comfort zone. Things you were like, I haven't tried it. I'll give it a shot. Maybe I'm good.
But also things that sounded appealing. Like there were a lot of things in the list that just didn't even remotely sound appealing, but they were things that maybe I hadn't done before, like pottery. I'm like, that could be cool.
Yeah. And the pole dancing, you were like, no, I'm not going to do that one. No. You're like, I already tried. Not my thing. Okay.
Yeah, it's experimentation. I think it's really important, but maybe not. I mean, let me give you another example. This conversation came up briefly in my local Choose Phi group. We did a big Phi 101 like a week or so ago. And I hosted the class. We put it together with me and one other guy, Alan Hansen, who's one of my admins. And this came up briefly. And he was like, you don't need someone to retire to. He goes, I didn't. I'm doing fine. But you know, but I think it comes down to Alan, if you're listening, I hope you don't, I hope you thought that sounded like you.
Yeah, that's his voice.
Wow. I don't know where that came from. That was very spontaneous. But yeah, I think some people are okay with just being and not having to feel productive all the time. And I'm just, it's just different personality types. But I needed that. I needed to feel like I was keeping busy. So that was my path.
Yes. And agree 100%, different personality types, and people have different like family dynamics and stuff like that. And I think that probably would come into play as well. In sharp contrast, to give the opposite kind of advice, I think sitting around and playing video games is bad. Don't play video games. Don't consume shit like that and watch TV all the time. That's probably not going to work.
Well, however, I'm having a hard time with the scrolling on the phone. I'm finding myself doing that more. And I'm like, I got to stop this.
Yeah, yeah. Throw the phone away. Yeah, yeah. But being bored, like in nature, and like, because I think people try to be busy so they don't have to think about the existential crisis that we're all going through. And we're all slowly dying second by second, those sort of crazy thoughts. And if you like sit and get bored, you'll have some cool ideas to do stuff. And it won't work for everyone. Like this could send some people down a very dark path.
Yeah, I think send me down a dark path. I think I would spiral.
But yeah, like sitting and being bored so that you're so bored that you want to create something, it's pretty good. Mm. And Pete and I were talking about this recently. I think we were probably recording it. I can't remember if we were. So it could have been mentioned in passing, but Pete said this well. He's like, it's really good to create something. He likes carpentry and building things. I think Carl, former host of the show, I think he likes building things as well, like his homes. He's working on a new house right now. And for me, I've been playing a lot more music and I'm making that social. So I play with Tyler, I play with Pete some, and it's a lot more meditative than like me being like really active doing a bunch of stuff. I've cut down like what I do dramatically, and I spend a decent amount of time walking outside. I play music. I go to the gym and work out. I cook a lot. I've narrowed it down, but those are like really like good activities for me. It is good to try new things. So I try to make sure I'm like exercising my brain and doing mm-hmm. things that are outside of what I would normally do. I think music is a good area for me right now to spend time on. But I think there's something about just relaxing and like being calm and not running around all the time. And that works really well for me. Some people may see it and view it as not being productive. And maybe it's not, but it works for me really well.
And who cares if it works for you? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right? Exactly. What makes you happy?
Yep. And the one other thing kind of related, like one thing that stresses me out is having a bunch of stuff on the calendar and like doing a bunch of things. And I think I learned this maybe specifically from Pete, where he likes to have like one activity per day. That's pretty good, because it turns out, I don't know, once a week, something in your schedule blows up. Something happens. There's a traffic jam. If you have so much shit going on and maybe you're like saying yes to too many things, you're like running around town, you're driving, traffic is always worse than you think. And being late and like being behind stresses me out, and I don't like it. I like having like one thing per day. This is what we're doing right now. This is the only thing I have planned today.
Okay.
It works really well for me. You can't always do it, but like most days, if I have the option.
I'm looking at my list. I'm like, how many things do I have today? Four. Okay.
And some of them are more minor, right? These are not like four major things. Yeah. So that could be okay. I mean, you could do other stuff, but yeah, most days like that lowers the stress level dramatically.
Yeah.
My hair's growing back.
You're what? What?
My hair's growing back from my low stress.
No, are you serious?
Oh. No, it's not growing back. No way. Yeah, there's like, three hairs. Can't you see it? Can't you see all my hair?
Well, okay, but one thing that we haven't addressed though is, you know, some of these hobbies or whatever you want to call them, things that we do in our free time, that requires skill, keep our brain going. So if you retire early,
right,
and you don't keep your brain engaged, you know, use it or lose it, right? Just like our bodies and staying healthy, we got to keep our brain healthy too. So for me, like planning these trips, I mean, I love doing it. I'd be doing it anyway, but that requires some brain engagement. So hopefully that's helping keep me going. Also, I'm still forecasting the weather. I know you believe that.
Yeah, you guys are doing the best you can. Yeah. And you write all your own forecasts. You're not just opening an app or whatever, right?
Right.
Okay.
This is correct. Yeah. Build all my own graphics.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Do all the things. No one's writing many scripts.
Yeah.
We just ad lib. Yeah.
People
think we have scripts. Yeah. So it's a lot of brain processing there. And then the planning of the trips and stuff for sure. Mm-hmm. Keeping them engaged because, I mean, you do the podcasting, right? So there's a lot of brain engagement there. Like you're coming up with ideas. Are you doing any of the editing?
No. So producer Chris, shout out to producer Chris. He does that for me. And I don't think like, I've edited a lot of stuff in the past. So if I did editing now, it's not really stretching me. It's just like a repetitive thing that is not very helpful. In fact, Chris is so good. He's probably at the point where it's not stretching him. So he learned new software when I taught him, but like now it's probably not as much. But that said, the intellectual conversations and I'm like, okay, like one of the big things I try to do, hopefully comes through on the show, is just thinking about the other perspectives and different opinions where I'm like, oh, I think this, how might I be wrong? And then like understanding that, I think it's a good intellectual exercise to think about it that way. But yeah, it's pretty decent from a cognitive like stimulation standpoint.
Yeah. And also there's the social aspect of work too, you know, those are our friends, but I think what you and I both have found is we've gotten really involved in the FI community and those have become our friends now. So we've already had this community built outside of work. So for me personally, that's not going to be an issue, but for other people who, if work is their community, that's definitely something to think about. Talk a little bit about some of the cons.
So definitely mentioned a couple areas where you accidentally create a job and
right.
then you stress yourself out. And I think luckily most people are able to identify this and then back down a little bit. I think I was talking to Chris Luger and he mentioned like he started a nonprofit and I think he struggled a little bit with treating it productive, smart guy, driven. And it's like, oh, I started this thing. Now I want to work on it really hard. And he had to figure out like how to wrestle with that a little bit. So it's pretty tough. Then another con, I think Carl ran into this and it's the project trap he's used to working on projects and he kind of endlessly has new things starting before other things finish. And that can be, for me, that would feel very stressful. Carl, I think he still doesn't have doorknobs in some of his fucking door.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with that. He says he puts a towel in there, but I'm like, come on, dude. Like, what are you doing? He's like, it's really hard to hire someone. I'm like, dude, you could have fucking hired for real.
Oh.
So, but anyway, if you have too many projects going on, that can be a bit of an issue. And depending on your personality, that could stress you out. It could be stressful for your family, depending on what's going on. So,
yeah. You know, I think some people also think they're going to retire to this thing. I've heard this example used a lot of times, like RVing around the country or whatever, but then they start doing it like, ooh, I hate this. So maybe try out some things before you commit to them. But if you're really focused on that specific thing to retire to, you also could miss out on this sort of organic discovery phase of early retirement, like how mine kind of fell into this trip planning, right?
Yes.
You might, yeah. So you don't want to realize 6 months in that the thing you thought you were going to do, you really loathe.
Right. And actually, I'll jump in. So I really like Morgan Housel and I reference him on the show often. He has a new book out and he's been on some podcasts. And one of his talking points, I'm not sure, I haven't read the book yet. It might be in the book, but One of his
Is it How to Spend?
How to Spend Money. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The Art of Spending Money, something like that. And he mentions the FIRE movement, kind of shits on it. I'm not sure how much is like playing up the FIRE movement to make fun of them a little bit, but he talks about the people that he knows that retired early, they went back to work after 6 months.
Mm.
And I'm thinking to myself, kind of to your point, someone thinks, I will probably really enjoy full-time digital nomadic life, and they're on the road, they buy an RV, they travel around. It turns out they don't like it that much, and they think, retirement isn't for me. Better go back to work. And I'm like, that's not the takeaway. It's just you thought you were going to like something that it turns out you don't like it as much because...
So try something else.
Yeah. There's a lot of different things you could do. And again, I'm not trying to prescribe and say like, oh, if you played video games for 6 months and you got depressed, I'm not really surprised that you were thinking, oh, better go back to work. All my friends are there. Mm. No one can play. So I think... understanding that you have a lot of flexibility and a lot of, you could do whatever you want. So I think it's
important. And the whole world is your oyster, right? But I think some people struggle with that because they're like, I don't know what I want to do. So that requires you to put in some effort and do the experimentation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that if you have no clue, like you work so hard, you don't have any hobbies, you don't really know what you love outside of work. I don't know that you're going to wake up tomorrow and be like, this is the thing. Like, I think you need to go and actually make some effort and do a little bit of searching, which I think is hard for some people to do that. I feel like they think they should just know. And some people do, and that's great, but some effort might be required.
And I can't remember who said it, but I've heard people repeat it, and maybe you can figure out the source, but it's only boring people are bored. Have you heard people say that?
Oh, I've heard that. I don't know what the source is though.
And I'm like, that is kind of an asshole way to say that. I'm like, you're not going to convince anyone with that statement. They're just going to be like, that's kind of mean. Maybe. What do you think? Like you could say, you worked really hard in your career. You haven't developed hobbies outside. That's a problem we could solve. Like we could work on that. But they're like, you are a boring person. I'm like, fuck you. Like, come on.
Well, isn't there a better way? I don't necessarily think it's untrue, but it's certainly something I would say to somebody.
That is a mean thing to say, Kristen.
Yeah, but I do think we need to ask that about maybe ourselves, but I wouldn't say that to you or anybody else.
Yeah. I think I'm picking it apart a little bit, but I think
some introspection is required.
Yeah. And this is where I'm like, yeah, you might be bored a little bit. You may have to figure out some hobbies. You may have to start something that you're not very good at and then realize you really love it and you're not very good. It's a hobby. Like that's totally okay. But I'm picturing someone who, let's say they're a lawyer, they work a ton of hours, they've been doing it for many years, they don't have a big social network, they don't have a lot of hobbies, and then all of a sudden they're not working because they retired early, and then they have a little crisis, and then someone's like, well, if you're bored, then that means you're boring. I'm like, that's pretty mean, dude.
Who would ever say that, though? I'm sure people, the person that originally shared
people
it.
People said it.
Wait, what?
Well, you've heard people say it, right?
Well, not like to me, just as like a concept. I think there's a big difference between thinking of it as a concept and like telling somebody that.
So one, I believe you. Yes, that's true.
Okay, thank you.
But here's the thing. There are thousands of people listening to this show. So even though like a person would say that, to the open air, to not anyone directly, someone will take that personally, potentially. And they're like, oh, I'm a boring person. Not me. I have a huge amount of confidence, but someone else may take that. And they're like, oh, am I a boring person? So even though no one's saying it to them directly, they may be interpreting it that way. Am I taking it too far? I mean, when I listen to a podcast, I feel like people are talking to me.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. But also, like, you know, you're so busy with work and you don't have any other hobbies and now you're not working, your life probably is a little boring, is it not?
they need to sit with themselves and like figure out some shit for sure. Yes.
But also, I would say like
that's being very well developed. Yeah.
Is different than being a boring person, right? So you just haven't figured it out yet. Right? You're not a boring person. You're bored because you don't have stuff, because you don't know yet, because you haven't had the time to develop hobbies because you've been working so hard. Now it's time to put in the effort. Maybe you're just bored. That doesn't make you a boring person. You just haven't had the time to develop and do the experimentation.
Yeah.
Which I think you should start doing before you quit, by the way.
Yes, 100%. And like, if you think you're going to love van life, like rent a van first and check it out before you like buy a van and like commit to it. You have flexibility, like test everything out, which is exactly what you did, Kristen. I mean, like you were planning the trips for fun for friends ahead of time. You tested all these different hobbies and then figured out like which ones worked for you. Did any of them stick that you were like, oh, I'm going to keep doing pottery?
I really tried to make the pickleball stick because I wanted to be a cool kid, but no, it just didn't happen for me.
I like how you just start playing like right away though. I mean, even if you're not that great, like rules are pretty easy. Everyone's nice.
That's for sure.
One of the cool parts. So, okay. Do we have anything else that we didn't cover on the pros and cons on the something to retire to? Okay. So what's the conclusion? I mean, I think it sounds like it depends on the person and if they need more structure or they don't need more structure.
Yeah. I mean, so much of this five stuff is nuanced, right? Like we have kind of like the general rules, but also we joke over and over, like it depends. There's a lot of nuance. It depends, right? So you have to do what's best for your personality type, what makes your brain feel the best, because there's a lot of psychology involved.
Yeah.
Like Morgan Housel says, what was his first book? Oh, it was The Psychology of Money, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I think I've heard it described one other way too, where people say like, whatever your weekends look like, those will expand. And I think just like you've done where you moved to part-time, it just allowed everything to expand a little bit kind of naturally while you still had structure. And I think that's a great way to approach it so you can transition into like however your days are going to be structured or weeks or whatever if you're traveling a lot. And it makes it much easier than like all of a sudden flipping a switch with like lots of structure to zero structure. And basically, like you said, you could do anything at any time with whoever you want. And it can be overwhelming. There's a lot of decisions to make.
Which I think, again, is a challenge more for the type A folks like me. If they're maybe not a challenge for you.
Right. Yeah. I'm somewhere in the middle. I mean, technically, I think I can drift into the type A area, but I could obviously shut it down pretty hard. Just kind of wander around, not get anything done. It's amazing. Okay. So I think we covered everything. Any other points before we let people know where they could find you?
No, I think we covered this pretty good. It was an interesting topic to cover. Thanks, Del.
Thanks, Del. And if you have questions out there, you can shoot me an email. And if you're a Buy Me a Coffee supporter, your questions will go to the top. So Kristen, what is going on with Five Friends Travel if people want to check it out and learn more about the trips and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So the 2026, we're doing a tulip cruise during tulip time, Netherlands and Belgium out of Amsterdam in early April. By the time this airs, it'll be really close, but there might be a spot left on the ship. We are doing Turkey in early June. There's 2 or 3 spots left on that one. And then we've got, oh, so excited, Tanzania for an African safari in October. We've got like 40 people. There was so many people that wanted to go. We did a la Camp Five. We have like two weeks of people. So one group comes in, they leave, another group comes in. So that is technically sold out, but people might drop out. So there is a waiting list going for that. And I've just started working on 2027. I have an email list. If you go to my website, fivefriendstravel.com, at the very top, you can subscribe. I won't spam you, I promise. I probably send out one or two emails a month. But I sent out an email to, right now I have about 950 subscribers. And I was like, hey, where do you want to go in 2027? Let people vote. And the top three vote getters are the trips that I'm planning. So Japan, Croatia, and Iceland is what's going to happen in 2027. I'm very much on the front end of this. I know those are the three. I can't tell you any more than that because I don't know yet. But once I do know, it'll be going out in those emails. So sign up if you're interested.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, we'll link up to that. And I'll see you soon, Kristen, in Cincinnati. We'll get some chili. And
if you're a listener and you see us, please come say hi. Like, I love meeting new people. And yes, Skyline Chili, we got to do that, right?
Yeah, yeah. We'll bring a crew.
Doing some recording or something and like sending it out from Skyline.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait to get some of that spaghetti with beans on there. So good. So good. I really do like it. People are like, do you really like it? It's great. I can't wait to go. We'll bring a crew. So if you're a listener out there, just find us. We'll go probably on Saturday or Sunday. We'll figure it out.
Do not go without me. I feel like last year, the normal regs like went without me and nobody told me. And I was like, what?
I didn't go. I missed it last year. I took a break. So, but this year I may go every day. It's so good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. We haven't chatted in a while, and I'm trying to remember. I mean, it could have been like November or something like that, but you've been on trips and you've done other stuff. Yeah. And now it's like already February. So there's so many stories to tell.
In December, Five Friends Travel, we did our first ever river cruise with Avalon. We visited the European Christmas markets between Vienna and Nuremberg. Beautiful, cold. I knew that going in. I was really afraid I was going to be miserable the whole time because I hate cold weather, especially being outside in it, but bundled up appropriately. Yeah, that was great. I don't know that I need to ever do that again, you know, because it's a big world. There's a lot to see. I'm super excited though. We're less than, it's like early April. We're going to Europe again for another river cruise round trip out of Amsterdam. We've got 37 people from the FI community on that one. Wow.
You guys are going to take over.
And yeah, I know. We've got a lot of shared friends that are going to be on that one.
Should be awesome. Yeah. And I was going to say, I mentioned it before, but I was on that cruise like 15 years ago or so.
Yeah. During tulip time out of Amsterdam.
It was awesome. Had a super good time. Very beer oriented for us. And I think it will be for you guys too. Because you're going through Belgium. There's a lot of beers that you can get access to there that you can't easily get. Belgium and the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So super cool.
We're doing some beer stuff, breweries, some things like that, creating some of our own excursions. But as of today, and now we're in, you know, mid-February, there were like five cabins left on the ship. So maybe by the time you hear this, there could be one left if you're a very last minute person. It's an early April thing, but everything's on fivefriendstravel.com. And then I've still got two or three spots left for Turkey in June. And the safari in Tanzania in October has been sold out for a while. But, you know, sometimes people drop out. Things happen. So if you want to join, there is a waiting list available for that one.
Okay, so one other thing we'll chat about before we get in, before we switch over to the show, which I'll tell you beforehand.
Thanks. In this case.
So recently, it's been really warm here in Colorado. It's been like 70 degrees. We should be getting snow and stuff. But
I'm so
I think
jealous.
Where you're at, it's been colder.
Awful.
And I know.
Hell on earth.
I mean, most of the country had like the big weather system going through. And for here, we didn't even get that much snow. It got pretty cold, but not outside of like what we're used to occasionally. So, I mean, it was like negative 5 Fahrenheit or something. So cold, but it happens like once or a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Not a huge deal, but I know I was thinking of you. I tried to watch some of your weather forecasts because I was like, oh man, you guys are probably losing your minds. You were probably very busy. And it was over a weekend. So I know you were probably working then, right? How'd that go?
Yeah. Oh, we get big snows every once in a while. They're not particularly frequent and they usually don't stick around very often. This particular weekend, we got about 8 or 9 inches, which is a lot for us. And then we went into this super cold spell where the temperatures were single digits in the morning, 20s for highs for like weeks. So then the snow just wouldn't melt. Yesterday, out of the blue, finally, yesterday, we got like into the 60s. Oh my gosh. It was like rainbows and unicorns. It was amazing. Everybody was outside. There was a day when we were in the middle of that cold spell where I actually looked like what's happening in Denver right now. Like it was like sunny in 55. I told my husband, I'm like, we have got to move. I mean, not necessarily to Denver, although that would be great, but my God, the weather here, it's just, we just get very dramatic swings. And I just would love to live somewhere where we got a little bit more sunshine year round and the weather was a little bit more moderate because this winter has been rough.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we kind of miss the colder weather. Like we do need precipitation. It's kind of very droughty. I mean, it's a dry area anyway, but the warmer, I mean, yeah, literally it's like 70 degrees in December or like on Christmas, I wore shorts and I mean, it'll cool off occasionally, but it's been unseasonably warm this whole time. So like,
want to trade?
Yeah. And then I was hearing like maybe like around Nashville, they had like
ice
power
storm.
Outages. Yeah. For like people didn't have power for like a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Which is
I haven't
serious.
Heard lately. Ultimately, how long it ended up taking? But man, you get more than like half an inch of ice, and that is a big deal because the power lines, you know, come down all over. And when you've got hundreds of thousands of people without power across the region, that takes a while. We haven't had a big ice storm here in St. Louis in a long time. I feel like we're overdue. I knock on wood. Do you guys get ice storms there? Is that something that ever happens?
It's super rare. Obviously, we'll usually get snow if it's that cold. So it's kind of rare for that to happen. Every now and then, there'll be like a freezing fog situation. We saw that a lot more in like Montana, but it's just so cold and it's very humid. And then it just freezes on stuff. And it looks like black ice. Like it just looks wet. So it's actually pretty dangerous. It's very thin.
Very dangerous.
And yet, even just like walking around the neighborhood, you can't exactly see what's wet or what's icy. So I have yak tracks usually that I'll try to bring around if that's the situation. And then it's just like chains for your boots or whatever. So then you get a little better grip. But I mean, so we don't get ice too much. And luckily in our neighborhood and like kind of the surrounding area, a lot of the utilities are buried. So that helps like at least in the neighborhood. So obviously there's other issues that can happen upstream, but a lot of the stuff is buried right around here.
Why the utility companies don't invest in more of that, I will not understand. I get that it's expensive, but so is putting up a million utility poles after a big storm. I mean, it seems like you would just do it and then save the money down the road, but what do I know?
Yeah, super rare. I can't remember the power going off for more than like 30 seconds, like whatever transformer blows like at the substation or something, but like power almost never goes out here because it's all buried, I think.
Nice. So, well, we're launching into spring here pretty soon. And I got to be honest, I'm nervous about severe weather season. Last year, severe weather season almost killed me.
It was crazy.
So We'll see how it goes this year. We do have an extra staffer that can help with some of the load. So I only work most weeks, 2 days a week now. So it's not too bad. I was doing a little bit more before he showed up. So now that he's here, they're asking me to come in during the week a little less often. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. One more off topic thing that won't fit in the show, but I was trying to remember you did function blood work and we talked about it.
Function health. Yeah.
So you had the initial blood test and then you checked in like 6 months later. Like where are things
at?
And
then I did another one.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. I just got the results from my third. So the initial, the 6 months later, and then kind of like the 1 year anniversary. So I'm able to track these biomarkers over time. And it's fascinating to see, you know, because after the first one, I made changes. So then at the second one, I could see what the big changes were that directly came from those changes. And then between the second and third, there were other changes. And to be able to track some of the things, it's been really, really fascinating. Not that this affects you, but maybe some of the ladies listening. Between my second and third function test, I pivoted from a birth control pill to hormone replacement therapy. And I still don't know exactly why. I'm going to ask my guy when I go and see him next week. But my cortisol went from really high back to normal levels after I switched from the pill to HRT. In addition, my high sensitivity, the hsCRP, which indicates inflammation in the body, it's still out of range, but it dropped significantly just going from a synthetic birth control pill to bioidentical HRT. So is it because one is synthetic and the other isn't? Is it because one's higher dose and one's lower dose? I'm not sure, but the changes were really shocking to me. I'm like, what? So I'm still figuring all that out.
And that's the inflammation marker.
The hsCRP one, yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. And just curious, were you keeping or were you regularly getting physicals and blood work? Obviously, function's more detailed, but were you regularly getting like your normal blood work?
Yeah. Once a year, I get a physical and they run kind of the basics, but they're always like, you're in range, you're good. But the truth is, and what I'm learning is that in range basically just means like, not sick and dying.
You're not dying from it.
The range is based on a, let's be real, kind of a sick population, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's sort of like an optimal range within in range, right? So it's trying to figure out what's optimal. So that's kind of what I'm working on with my hormones right now. It's kind of like some things are in range, but they're low and I'll probably feel better if I can get them a little bit higher. So we're tinkering. So maybe next time we talk, I'll have some new information. I go back in and visit with my functional medicine doc next week. After I saw him after my first appointment, I gave him the function health testing that I did. And I was like, okay, here's these numbers. Oh, this is a fun one. I have been losing hair. Like nobody's, I know I still have a lot of hair. I had a ton of hair to start with though. And over the last year, I've just really noticed every time I take a shower and constantly all over me and all over the floor. And my ponytail is like half the thickness it used to be. Yeah. And I'm noticing I can see my scalp a little bit for the first time. And I'm like, what the hell is happening? And I mentioned that to him and he looked at my function health stuff and he goes, well, your ferritin is low. That's why. He's like, yeah. So then I Googled it and I'm like, oh, that's the thing. Well, nobody's ever told me that before. So anyway, I'm going to be working on that and hopefully that makes a big difference. And I'm just learning a lot. It's fascinating stuff.
Interesting. And I think I may do the function thing. I have a physical coming up and over the last few years, I was testing like drinking alcohol versus not. And then this year, just kind of naturally, I was drinking a little less. I did kind of a damp January, we'll call it moist January. Moist. And then what I've done, I've never done this before. I'm a big consumer of red meat and beef.
Okay.
And I've cut that out pretty dramatically, not 100%, but I mean, basically I was probably having like 5 to 7 servings like per week. And which is a lot, like anyone would say, like that's a pretty significant
amount. Why did you make the change though? What were you trying to accomplish?
So I'm very interested in my cholesterol and generally the saturated fat, per my understanding, it should probably lower my LDL, which were in range. My cholesterol was like much better than it had been. I think it was like, it's like 190 or 180 or 190. I can't quite remember, but LDL was always kind of like a little on the higher end, maybe like borderline, but overall it was okay. But I'm curious just from like switching over to mostly chicken and more fish. So I'm curious if there will be like a, maybe triglycerides as well. So again, stuff was mostly in range. And I mean, I think years ago, my cholesterol had crept up to maybe like 225, 230, which they were like, oh, you got to look out. So I lost a little weight, maybe like 15 pounds or something like that. And then just I'm eating less and eating healthier. So like things have gotten better over time. And I'm curious about the, I love red meat and steaks and stuff like that, but we were having it like all the time and it was awesome, but I've cut a lot of it out. And I'm like, I'm just curious, like we're eating well, but just not as much steak. So
yeah, the function stuff is really great, but you know, it's not like you're getting on the phone with a doctor and being like, I'm worried about this. And based on my numbers, you know, then what? And it, I mean, they give you some clinician's notes, but I'm finding that I need to go a little bit deeper. And maybe for most people's situation, that's enough. But for me, a lot of my cholesterol numbers were not great. My heart stuff wasn't, numbers weren't great. And then I was really worried about the hsCRP. And I was also really worried, I got a positive ANA scan, which it's about autoimmunity. And it's suggesting that I'm having an autoimmune response in my body, which could be a precursor to an autoimmune disease. So I need to get to the bottom of that. So that's kind of why I've started seeing somebody in person locally. And so when I went to see him, gosh, it was probably about 6 weeks ago or something like that. And he ordered a bunch of additional testing, and it's out of, insurance doesn't cover this. I mean, it's out of pocket. It was expensive. I've decided this is my year of health. So I'm throwing everything at it, but bunch of additional testing. And then I'm supposed to go back to see him next week to analyze all of that and then kind of put together a plan of what I need to change to try to improve some of these biomarkers and hopefully lose some weight and some other things like that, because I feel like I'm dealing with some weight loss resistance too. Just kind of got to figure all that out.
Gotcha. Yeah. Super interesting. And like you could spend a lot of time. And I mean, luckily I'm not monitoring anything other than like I said, cholesterol. My blood pressure is like really good. So like the typical issues that people may run into, I think most of the stuff would be around like, hey, idiot, don't eat so much red meat all the time and don't drink so much and like get enough rest. So I think all of mine are like pretty simple. Don't like overconsume things, like moderation is better.
Yeah.
But
have you ever had a coronary calcium score done?
No, but that's the other thing where I'm like, oh, that could be interesting. Did you do that?
Yeah. For me, it was just a sleep better at night kind of deal, because I saw that, you know, these numbers were kind of elevated, these heart markers. And you can just pay out of pocket, just Google coronary calcium score near me or whatever. Mm. I went to this place, I paid $99. Yeah. And the deal is you want a zero, because they're basically looking for buildup in your arteries. And just knowing that you don't have that is nice.
what was yours? Were you in zero. Good shape? Really?
Okay. Zero to zero. Yeah. My husband did it too. He's got a zero. So we're like, okay, cool. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was good.
Interesting. Yeah. I should have that done. How long did it take?
10 minutes.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. It wasn't very long. Yeah.
Cool. I'll check it out. This is like the longest sound check ever. So I think we got a good sample.
You don't have to play all this. You should cut out all that beginning stuff. That was sort of weird.
Okay. That's perfect. And then I'll leave the end part in. So people will be like, what did they cut out?